scale here. Despite Bad News Ramen's best attempts to trick me, it is number 34.
Is it 34?
Yeah.
I think it's 33.
I think it's 34.
Why do you think it's 34?
Because I'm pretty sure it was 33 last week.
Okay.
But
okay.
Nevertheless,
all right.
We're coming. And we're here, just as the Wyatt family is here. They arrived last night, and I think that's probably the best place to start off. Much anticipated debut of the new iteration of Husky Harris, Bray Wyatt. And, you know, I know I was kind of amped up when I first heard that they were on the way. I think it took you a couple weeks before you started getting behind it, but I know you're invested now, so I'll start off with asking you, what'd you think of the debut?
Well, over the past two podcasts, I pretty much said I've been geeking out this whole time waiting for it.
Right.
I actually kind of wanted to see what you thought about it. And I guess I'll get into that later. I thought it was really good. If they want to make people watch WWE Raw get their reins up, that's definitely one way of doing it. It was about 2 hours of really good wrestling, I think. 2 hours of a really solid show. The third hour, they kind of come in off of the Christian and Kane match. And I don't know what else to say. It's just I'm trying to think of all the reasons why I like it. One, it's kind of, and I was thinking about it earlier today, that Dusty Rhodes was the guy that came up with the idea for the Wyatt gimmick, you know, good old Death Day. And it really reminds me kind of, I guess, of old school wrestling. And when I say old school, probably like in the 80s and stuff and everything. It's just, it was kind of like, I was thinking like Dusty had a lot of ideas for WCW or even NWA, but he didn't have the production value for it. Or he didn't have someone to kind of say, well, don't roll it out yet. Let's give it some time to build. I don't know how involved he was in having them debut. He probably just created the characters and then Bray Wyatt took off with it. Mm-hmm. But it really shows just kind of the production value and kind of stuff. There's so much stuff that kind of brings up with it. You know, a lot of Cape Fear type aspects of it.
Yeah.
Even Deliverance or whatever, that old 1971 where the George Foreman video game, can you squeal like a pig and stuff like that. But I really liked it. And I thought the entrance was good, even though it was an electric lantern, and he blew out an electric lantern.
Yeah, I thought that electric lantern was kind of weak, to be honest. Like, I liked the build-up, the whole build-up of kind of going to their little shanty and following him around, and the way he lit up the actual lantern in the video, I thought that was, it looked really good. And then, yeah, I wasn't really feeling the halogen lantern. I didn't think that was real hillbilly enough. But
hillbillies like, have halogen lamps, you know? What the heck, dude?
Wow, really?
It's the 21st century, now, man.
Not if they're living in that shanty that they are in. But no, I thought the build-up was good. I like the entrance. Music's tight. I was kind of hoping, I was kind of hoping they did a little bit more, or I got to see a little bit more of them and what they can do. I mean, it's just a standard beatdown. I mean, it's impressive because it's Kane. And they did do a pretty, I guess I will believe that they did damage, even though it was pretty obvious
that
it was the concave side of the stairs. But, the two big tough guys are pretty much matched Kane in size. I like to see how well they can work. But I do think maybe it leads into, if Kane gets hurt, maybe Bray Wyatt's going to be in the Money in the Bank.
I didn't even think about that. One thing I did kind of think of is that if Kane did get hurt or whatever, then you kind of have the Brothers of Destruction facing off against the Wyatt family in SummerSlam, if Undertaker's still around. I wanted to bring up, you have the extra Wyatt family guys, the two big guys, and I was kind of thinking of, it's kind of a nice kind of little reference point. When Kane first came into the WWE, he was Dinkum the dentist. What was something?
I believe it was Dr. Isaac Yankum.
Yankum, there you go. Dinkum's the same. It doesn't matter. But you have a big guy like that. They didn't know how to. They didn't know how. You have these two really big guys, and how do you kind of make them so you're interested in them? I was kind of talking to the producer. He's the one that kind of hooked us up with the music. And he said that the two guys, he saw a match with him with the two guys versus Cassius Ohno and someone else. And he said, how those two guys do? And he says, well, anytime you have Cassius Ohno, he's going to steal the show. He's like, they didn't impress me too much. He said that he saw Bray Wyatt fight a couple times. You know, he has a really good finisher. I asked him what his finisher was. I'm like, is it the senton that he did with Husky Harris? He's like, I don't know what it was, but I remember it was really good. But it's just kind of a good way to bring in this just really, these two big guys look really green to me. And it's a really good way just to kind of bring them in, kind of have Husky Harris kind of carry the show in terms of promos and everything else. The promos leading up to it, they did it the right way. Just really, you know, I'm always a big guy of small things. You know,
big guy.
I'm a big guy. Hey, Judge. But I'm a big proponent of the little things, and just the little things of saying we're coming or follow the buzzards, and then when he lights up that lamp and he says we're here and that music hits, it's good theatrics, man.
Yeah, no, the theatrics were great. I thought the build was great. Like I said, I didn't get a, you know, you're saying maybe Rowan and Harper seem a little green. Maybe that's what it is. I want to get a little bit of sense of what they can do in the ring, right? It's like, I know what Husky Harris can do in the ring, so I'm not sweating that too much. It's kind of like when the Shield came, you know, we saw these run-ins.
Man, you're running all cylinders, because I was gonna bring up the Shield, but go ahead.
Okay. That's good, because my life is falling apart around me, but it's like that.
Come on, Gorilla.
But, I want to, like the Shield, you know, we didn't see him for a few months. We just saw run-ins and beat-downs. It took a while for us. You know, I figured they had the chops, but, you know, I just wanted to see it. And this Rowan and Harper, I really don't know anything about, except for they're a couple of big guys, Judge. So I just want to see what they can do if they get in the squared circle.
Well, we know what Husky Harris can do.
Right.
We've seen this guy. We've always been a big fan of his in-ring work. It's funny that you do bring up the Shield, because the Shield, it was kind of the Shield's been... It hasn't been done before, but kind of the run-ins, you don't know who these guys are, and they just kick someone's ass and stuff, and then they do that week in and week out. That's kind of been done before. You can point to the NWO doing that, other guys doing that. This one really is centered around Bray Wyatt's mic work, which I think is really good. We had to wait for the Shield for a while to see if they can get on the mic and cut promos, and lo and behold, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins are really good on the mic. Reigns does what he needs to do to kind of extend the promo along. But this one is so promo-based driven. There's a fear of me. I was like, as good as Bray Wyatt's on the mic, he's even better in the ring. And it just kind of shows that they're giving this guy a chance. And I always go back to Dusty Rhodes. Dusty really was the whole package. The only thing that he didn't have was the physique to make him really great. But this guy was huge in the 70s, and he did a lot of storylines, and even in the 80s, going against Tully Blanchard, going against the Four Horsemen, the guy could go in the ring. He knew, he had charisma. And I just like seeing Dusty recognizing that, giving this character to this guy. I mean, if someone came up to you and said, hey, and you're a wrestler, you're going to go like, hey, you're going to play a backwoods guy from West Virginia, and you're going to do a cult, and that's going to be your personality, or that's going to be your gimmick. You're going to sit there and go, well, what the hell am I going to do with that? Well, Bray Wyatt's taken it and has really took off with it, and you pretty much forget everything about Husky Harris, and now it's just more concentrating on this guy on the mic, and he hasn't done anything in the ring yet.
Unfortunately, the fans didn't forget about Husky Harris, because...
He came right back on that. When they were doing the Husky Harris chant?
Yeah.
I saw it on Twitter. He didn't say it, but someone that I followed on Twitter said that when asked about the whole Bray Wyatt thing, he's like, oh, I still remember Bray Wyatt. I still remember Husky Harris. He's just a vessel for what I am now. And it's just like, dude, I mean, you're covering all your bases with that. And I thought, you know, I don't know what else to say. It lived up to the hype. I'm really excited about it. It was fun to watch. It's like wrestling is wrestling again. It's like you're giving me a reason to watch every week. And we're not even talking about the pay-per-view, which I'm really interested in probably looking at too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought it was a really good Raw, so and that debut was pretty big, so, I think it does raise some questions going forward, right? Like, I think, you know, maybe Kane is hurt, right? Because, you know, you wouldn't think that he could take his head getting sandwiched between the two staircases and show up and wrestle in under a week. So I think, you know, maybe we'll see Bray in there. I think that would be pretty interesting.
Now, his brother, who's his brother now?
Bo Rotunda.
But wasn't he under, like, Bo Wyatt or something like that? Didn't he?
No, he did that, like, two-week feud with Wade Barrett right around Royal Rumble.
So he's not affiliated with the Wyatt family then?
No.
Okay, all right. Because I kept on seeing Bray Wyatt, Bo Wyatt. I thought he was under Bo Wyatt, and I was going like, well, how the hell are they going to fix, you know, fit this stuff in there and everything like that?
I mean, if that guy could ever wipe that stupid smile off his face, maybe he could get with the program and join the family.
It reminds me a lot of Gene. Remember the Eugene? Eugene, that's what it reminds me of.
Eugene?
Yeah, just a big old smile on his face and scraggly hair.
It reminds me of Duke, the action figure.
Duke, the action figure. Well, it's funny that you're bringing this stuff up, because I wanted to get into something else, and the whole reason why I bring up Duke is the Duke, the action figure, had this big old cheesy grin on his face, and he was always the last guy picked whenever we picked G.I. Joe guys. Now, I had the more extensive G.I. Joe collection than you did.
I'm going to say you're being facetious right now, but you go right ahead.
And I love John Cena. But he was always the last guy. He was always the last guy picked along with, was it probably like Cobra Commander in the hood, not the, because I like the mask, but it's probably Cobra Commander in the hood. He was always one of the last guys picked, right? So we'd have like this big old war zone and stuff like that, and we'd have like Duke get like shot in the balls and stuff and everything like that. He'd have a big old smile on his face. And we got older, probably 13, 14, when we started using the G.I. Joe guys to wrestle. And you had your own little G.I. Joe wrestling, which was epic. But, you know, we'd have Duke have the gay gimmick, you know, and he'd be getting it from behind and stuff. He has this big old smile on his face and everything. So that's good times. So one thing I did want to bring up, and I didn't know if we could do a segment on this or start naming a segment, but it's kind of old. Because one other thing, too, we always talked about wrestling. We brought up Paula Kayfabe and the wrestlers that we liked. But wrestling's been part of our vernacular for a long time. I just kind of like the certain stories. I don't know if we can put a segment. Maybe you can put your mind to it and figure it out because you did such a great job with Hall of Kayfabe. But there's one story that I want to bring up, and you probably know what the story is. It's probably like our best wrestling story ever. We were at San Jose State University. There's a McDonald's right across.
Didn't we talk about this one time?
I don't know if we did. I don't think we ever did.
Okay.
Did we ever do it?
It seems like we have, but we've talked about this so much. Go ahead,
man. Well, I mean, we're 33 in. I don't think everybody's listened to all 33. All right. So I don't know. Were we drinking at the time?
No.
So we're just...
Wait. No. Okay. If we were drinking, we would have been at that pizza place.
Yeah, we would have been at the pizza place. So we're... I'm probably, like, all stressed out from doing the newspaper and stuff, so this guy would roll around. I didn't have any money, because I'd have to drop, like, $800 on rent and stuff and everything like that. So I never had any money. This guy would always kind of roll through, ask if we wanted lunch, and so we'd go, like... wherever we would go to, he'd buy me beer and stuff. And like, he's a good friend. This guy over here, he's a good friend. I'm Bad News Rama. He's Better Have My Donuts. Better Have My Donuts, he's a good guy. So we went to a McDonald's one time, and he's just popping off on Ric Flair and doing all the Ric Flair stuff and yelling. We're standing in line, and he's yelling, going like, you know, shut up and bring your woman up here. I'll make a woman out of her and stuff like that. We're doing all the old wrestling shtick, right, that Ric Flair does. So he's getting close to doing probably one of the most famous Ric Flair lines ever. And I'm kind of standing in the back, and I see this kind of this fat kid come up, kind of walking. And I kind of have a feeling that
was the next line?
That he's going to do it, yeah. I'm not going to say the line, so I'm kind of just kind of sitting there, just kind of PMDing it. I saw it coming. So right when this kid's going to ask us a question. Right when he comes up behind us from the line, and Better Have My Donuts over here turns around, has no idea the kid's there. He turns around, points straight at this kid, and goes, "Shut up, fat boy!" And the poor kid, he's like, "Are you guys standing in line?" And Kevin was ahead of me. He's like, Kevin felt so bad. He's like, "No, go ahead, kid." And I'm going like, "Man, you ruined." I was like, Razor Ramon, like,
scarred the kid for life.
You scarred her soul. But the kid, I was like, he's probably like, I bet you the kid like went home, started crying, you know, and because someone called him a fat boy and stuff, and you felt really bad. And it's one thing I would always bring up, and you just feel really bad about it. But I bet you this guy's like ripped now, dude. I bet you've inspired this guy. That was probably his last trip that he ever did to McDonald's. And he's all ripped now, and he's driving around town looking for you, playing the Bray Wyatt song and stuff like that.
He kind of looked like the older brother in Family Guy.
He wasn't that fat. I mean, he was chunky, but
at the time, just at the
not now because he's all ripped.
I'm glad that for the record here that he said that I didn't know the kid was there because in countless retellings of the story, I knew the kid where the kid was and I was going straight after him.
Yeah. You saw him walk, open the door, and he ran down and said, "Shut up, fat boy."
Yes, yeah, that was a. That was one of them. That definitely happened. It was I felt pretty bad about it for a little while.
For a little while, I'd probably say 3-4 years. It kind of shaped your life for about 3-4 years. The poor kid, man, crying over there and stuff and everything. So, all right. So we talked about the Wyatt family. I think we're done. I don't think we have anything else to talk about. You know, I'm pretty good. Raw was great. Raw's been good for the past couple times. So let's just call it a show and call it even. What do you say?
Sure, whatever.
You're not, man. Now you're like the dude in Heat, yeah. Danny Trejo in Heat with the tattoo on his chest. So, what else you want to get into?
Well, I kind of wanted to talk about the whole Vicky Guerrero thing because I think it was a pretty big part of the show, and Well, they're kind of, it looks like they're phasing, obviously they're phasing her out for a little bit, though I'm kind of guessing she's going to end up managing Ryback. But phasing her out to, I think, bring the McMahons into a more prominent role. I just thought it was really interesting. I thought it was good Triple H, right?
Really?
Yeah.
And you thought it was interesting at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay. I totally disagree, but go ahead. Tell me why it was interesting.
Well, you kind of said that, like, Triple H is better as a character when he's kind of himself. And I felt like he was kind of being himself in those little things back and forth with McMahon. I think he said what most of the people thought, that, yeah, every once in a while, Vicky Guerrero, you might laugh at her, but it's never because anything intentional. She's really annoying, and people really don't get behind her. I don't think she's over. And, like, her little tantrum kind of proved it, right? It was just annoying. I was just happy that they finally canned her, right? Or, I mean, I know it's kayfabe. I know she's not really fired. But just the fact that I'm not going to have to watch her stumble through promos and get up there and yell excuse me every like hour and a half made me happy. And so I thought it was I'm not saying it was great TV, like the whole thing with Vicky Guerrero, but I'm glad that she's gone. I was kind of, when they went to do the Raw the app poll, I was thinking 80% was going to say go, and it was 75, so I was pretty close. But I thought Triple H was pretty good in arguing against McMahon when they were arguing.
Well, first of all, that vote was, I mean, come on, that vote was fixed, dude, 75-25, come on, dude. Where they had, like, five people vote. Can you get a 75-25 from five people voting?
Nah, they said that was the most anyone's ever. I kind of believe that one. I mean, I know most of their app votes are bogus, but I kind of believe that one because I think there's plenty of people that really can't stand Vicky Guerrero.
Well, the Miz's multitude of followers seem to disagree. Yeah.
No, I don't know. Well, here's the thing. So I thought that Triple H, like, revealed a little bit of the curtain. This whole idea of McMahon thinks that just because someone's getting booed, that means that they're over. I think Triple H kind of pulled that back a little bit and said, "Yeah, she's getting booed, but it's not a good boo, right?" And that, I think that's exactly what it was. And you don't really get that too often. So I did like the interplay between McMahon and Triple H. I thought Triple H was being as honest as they could be about what the actual Vicky Guerrero situation was. So in that part, I liked it. And I liked the back and forth with him and McMahon. I thought it was good.
Well, the only thing that I can get behind what you're saying, but I know people want to see the McMahons get more involved within the company and stuff, but I just have a bad memory of all four McMahons in each corner of the ring for SummerSlam, and they were there, and it's like, it's just, I think they're trying to pass themselves off as the most dysfunctional family in the U.S. or something. It's kind of on the heels of Ozzy Osbourne stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just don't know why, if they're going to come back into the mix, I don't know why they're going to center around Vicky Guerrero. I mean, what storyline can you increase with Vicky Guerrero? It doesn't make any sense. It'd be more of a case of if it was one of the top flight stars or something like that, and you can kind of settle off in the ring. But the reason why with Vicky, I just don't get it. I don't know why she's the focal point of this whole kind of family coming back. I really didn't like... Stephanie McMahon needs to get rid of her stupid-ass music. I get tired of that music. I get tired. I thought she was really bad in the promo, just kind of being a character that she's not. The whole daddy's little girl and the whole, like, my wife and stuff. It's just, it didn't do anything for me. And then of course, you kind of bring in, and I know you're not bringing up Vicky Guerrero, but let's just say that the best thing out of that whole Vicky Guerrero thing on Raw was Ryback coming up to her and giving her a hug and saying, "It'll be okay. It'll be okay." You know, I don't get why she's the focal point of this whole McMahon thing.
Well, I don't know that she is. I mean, I guess it kind of was this week. I think they just wanted to use it because they know people don't like her and they wanted to make a big focal point about firing her. But I think the focal point is, it probably is more the dysfunction of the McMahon family, which I'm fine with.
But there's so many loose ends, though, because you have the whole Triple H, Vince McMahon not having him fight Brock Lesnar. That's kind of been pushed off to the side. It's just like, okay, so here's something new. Is this going to be pushed off to the side, or is something going to happen?
Well, from the stuff that I've been reading on the internets.
The interwebs?
This would be like, Bleacher Report stuff, PW Mania.
Okay, don't bring a Bleacher Report. No, but go ahead. PW Mania is legit. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I've seen it from multiple outlets. What I'm trying to say.
Because you're a journalist like Bobby the Brain Heenan, right?
I'm a broadcast journalist. Well, they're trying to build towards WrestleMania. The next WrestleMania is going to come to the head something regarding the McMahons. So it looks like they're in it to be on TV for the long haul. So with that, that's fine. I mean, I think if they're going to do that and they're going to be on TV every week, there is no need to have Vicky Guerrero. So I'm fine with that. I'm not saying every time the McMahons come out, it's gold. Like, generally, whenever Vince is there, it's pretty good. Not having Linda there, I think, is a boon. I wouldn't be mad if Shane showed up every once in a while. I like Shane. I think
Shane's not in the company anymore. He's doing something totally different.
Oh, see. I figured he was doing... I thought maybe he was just straight behind the scenes.
He's part of, like, a cable company now. He's, like, a vice president or something like that. He's not in the company anymore.
Okay. So, I'm fine when Vince is there. Stephanie, yeah, she wasn't anything special yesterday, but she's done all right from time to time. And then Triple H in his capacity is good. As long as they keep him out of the ring, I'm fine with that. Kind of interested to see if anything develops out of the Brad Maddox promotion. I mean, I don't think the guy's bad. I don't think they've really figured out a really good way to use him. I don't know if this is going to be it, but I'm curious enough to see what direction it's going to go in. Because, you know, you got angles, right? You could have now, all of a sudden, maybe Paul Heyman wants to come back and make up with Maddox.
But do you think there's enough time to kind of do the whole McMahon thing? I mean, even though Raw was really good, it was still 3 hours long. And you're still just kind of, it's like the second hour in, and it's coming up to the third hour, and you're sitting there going, like, damn, I'm like, this is a really long, I mean, this 3 hours is long. I guess it felt so long to me because I didn't fast forward anything. Because every segment was good, and they're hitting every single segment was good. The John Cena segment had Mark Henry. Mark Henry outperforms him on the mic once again. I think along that, too, is I was watching it live. So, you know, when you're watching it while you're tweeting and you're on Twitter, it's a lot more fun. But you're kind of sitting going, like, this is like a three-hour-long thing. So maybe if they intersperse the McMahons in somehow that way. But their roster's so deep right now. There's so many more people I want to see. I'd much rather see the primetime players wrestle or do something with their characters. Of course I want to see the Wyatt family. Of course I want to see the Shield. There's more things you can storytelling you can do besides just kind of, it just seems that these storylines with the McMahons, it's just kind of like, we need to have backstage stuff. It's always what we've always done, so now it's time to dust it off and let's go. I don't think you need to have that right now. I don't think you need to have the promos as much. As long as you have the right guys on the mic, CM Punk coming out doing a promo, Dolph doing his little spiel and stuff, I don't think you need to have this third storyline, and I really don't want to see any type of McMahon type thing in WrestleMania. It doesn't appeal to me. What are they going to fight for the company? Who cares if they fight for the company? Because everybody knows that McMahon's still going to run the company, and even though say Triple H takes over Raw again, or Stephanie takes over Raw again, it's just going to be the same storyline rehashed over and over again.
Yeah, I guess it could be. I mean, I haven't thought too deep into what's going to come out of it, but I was fine with it for what it was and what it is. I'm generally, you know, I like when Vince is on the show, and I'm fine with Triple H as long as he's not wrestling.
But so, what avenues? So here's the thing, though, with this whole GM thing. What you talk about angles, what angles can they take? There's only about three or four angles they can do, and do you want to see it again? I mean, what angles can you take with that? You have the power hungry GM going against the fan favorite wrestler. That's been done before, and that was really good for business. But it's the same storyline. Or you have a power struggle. Lo and behold, there's a power struggle up on top, which they're kind of alluding to with this whole Vicky Guerrero thing about all three of them disagreeing. Who's Stephanie going to choose? So there's that. Is there another angle that's going to totally blow my mind? It's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, you may be right. I can't disagree. I can't guarantee it's gonna be great, but I'm okay with it for what it is now.
Okay.
If it starts dragging on and getting stupid, I'll be the first to say so. But
yeah, you'll stand up. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm okay with what it is right now. Is what I'm saying.
Okay.
You okay with that?
I'm fine with that. Let's go. Professional segue. Let's go.
Okay. Well, that's too late for the professional segue, but we can get into, because like you were saying, the matches were really good. There's a lot of good matches on the show. So aside from that promo,
you know, one thing I want to bring up, unless it, this is something really pressing. But one guy that's getting a lot of hate on Twitter and has all of his kind of his momentum is kind of just fallen by the wayside is one Sheamus. I mean, where do you stand with Sheamus right now in terms of what he is?
He's a victim, brother. He's a victim of 400 years of conditioning. I mean, no, he got stale.
10 years of conditioning. Yeah.
He got stale, and he got stale fast. But it's like you said, I mean, I don't think it's anything new. I mean, they're putting him right down the John Cena path. And I got tired of him because I just saw him beating the same guys over and over and over again for the last 6 to 8 months, right? And so that's what kind of bored it to me. It's like, I think he's good in the ring. I like him when he's kind of a badass. But they've just kind of made him this kind of jokester guy. And then they made him another invincible guy. Whereas, like, you know, I look at him, you put him in matches against, say, Orton or Cesaro, all these guys that physically match up pretty equally against him. And he just beats him, like, 8 times in a row, right? And I really got sick of it because it just reminded me of the whole John Cena thing. So I think he can work some really good matches with these guys. He's not bad in the ring, and he's okay on the mic, though they just have him doing a bunch of dumb stuff now, which, I mean, it's not really his fault.
Yeah. I was kind of I really soured on the guy pretty fast, and it doesn't take me a long time to sour on someone. I do recognize that he was kind of I think they had the three musketeers. You know, you have John Cena, Randy Orton, and Sheamus, and these were the guys. These were the faces that nobody could touch, mm-hmm. and that these are the guys that they can make money off. They're proven that they can make money off of it, off of those guys.
Does Sheamus make money?
I have
no idea.
I don't know either. He hasn't been put in a spot for him to make money. And one of the points I kind of brought up last night was Sheamus is really good in the ring. Very good storyteller in the ring, very rough in the ring. He's a good wrestler. He's fun to watch in the ring. But like you said too, when he's winning all the time, there's no suspense there. I already know he's going to win. He'd be a lot better if he lost a couple times to develop his character more and kind of come back. The whole thing between him and Sandow, I don't know why you have Sandow lose to him all the time. What is the draw in that? Where's the money in that? So, yeah, it's like I think he can make money, but he's not going to make money if he always wins. He's never going to lose a title. He's not holding a title. I think, you know, you can kind of compare it to Cena. People are saying, like, well, Mark Henry will probably lose to Cena. I think that Henry will win against Cena. If I was the WWE creative and I was pulling the strings, I would have Henry win so there's a big payoff for SummerSlam because everybody wants to see John Cena win. There's no point in having Cena win against Mark Henry and then he's going to be a main event again on SummerSlam because this guy's a constant main event and there's no reason for me to purchase the main event because I don't care about the main event because he wins every single time. I'd much rather see Mark Henry win, and if they want to do business, then you can drop the title to Cena. I have no problem with that. But because I know they're trying to make money, they need to do the same thing with Sheamus. Sheamus and Sandow could have been a really good run, kind of like Sheamus versus the Big Show. That was a really good run right there.
Right.
And the payoff was good. And I'm just waiting for the payoff, and we can sit here and say, like, well, Daniel Bryan beat Sheamus, so now all of a sudden, you know, he does a job for people, but it's a one-time thing.
Yeah, well, I think it remains to be seen whether that starts a trend. I thought that was probably the most compelling Sheamus match I've seen in a couple of months, and I think you put Daniel Bryan in the ring with anybody, it's just money right now. I agree with you. I mean, there's no point to seeing. You know, I'd forgotten the whole Sandow thing. Why do I need to see Sheamus beat Sandow 5, 6, 7 times in a row, right? Let Sandow win a match or two. He's got somebody on the side, you know, you can let him win by cheating, you know.
The guy that's going to turn face pretty soon?
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, it looks like it's going that way. What was the thing that you wanted to bring up?
I was just going to talk about the matches in general, the build. I mean, I thought all the matches for the Money in the Bank participants were pretty good. I mean, the Kane-Christian match was pretty quick, but the other one, like the Orton and CM Punk match, I thought was really good.
And that was actually a really good match. And people were kind of pointing saying that Sheamus and Sheamus and Bryant was way better than Orton and Punk. I disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I think Daniel Bryan's very good. I think you have to suspend your belief a little bit with Daniel Bryan just because he's very technical, but it's not like he'd be more believable to me if he concentrated on one area and really kind of focused on one body part or something and just warmed down eventually over the time. But he comes out with all this flash stuff and everything like that, and it works. And I thought it was a great match. I'm not trying to sit here and say that it wasn't a good match. I just thought that the storytelling that Orton and Punk did was way better, because it's funny, Orton has now kind of, with his ring work now, you know every move that he's going to do, and now that it starts affecting the outcome of the match. The power slam, you know, he did it last week with SmackDown too. I forget who he was doing it with, but he was ready to do the power slam. The guy knew that power slam was coming, so he countered it. And the power slam again was countered this time, and then Punk does something, and then he does that flash power slam real fast and right. Gets into that whole mode, and then he sets up for the RKO. Punk does that great Hyman kick.
The Hyman kick?
It's a Hyman kick. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said the Hyman kick.
No, not the Hyman kick. Hyman kick. Oh, the Hyman.
The Hyman kick.
That developed by Buster Hyman. Yeah. Yeah. Very, very effective. Yes. One shot.
You're in the royal box.
But he does the Hyman kick, okay. That's a fire pro wrestling term. That's the kick that I use for CM Punk. It's called a high man kick. Okay. But then he hits
CM Punk straight edge. That makes no sense.
but then he does the GTS, and then, you know, that's the match 1, 2, 3. Yeah. And then Daniel Bryan comes in. I kind of thought that Daniel Bryan was going to come in and fuck the match up. Mm-hmm. But they have a clear cut
winner
in the ring. And I think, you know, Randy Orton comes out better for it. CM Punk comes out better for it. Randy Orton comes out better for it because his storytelling is different. And you're sitting there, you watch this guy get pinned 1, 2, 3, and you're like, wow, this, you know, Orton's doing the job like he's supposed to.
Well, and I hope WWE is kind of paying attention because, okay, we went through about 2 years. I don't think Randy Orton lost clean once. In the last couple of months, maybe even last month, he's lost clean to Daniel Bryan. He's lost clean to CM Punk now. I don't think Randy Orton has lost any credibility in the eyes of the fans.
I think he's gained more credibility by doing that. When he lost clean to Wade Barrett, that's when I kind of started looking at the guy. He has more credibility to me now because he was pushed so much in terms of the WWE machine that we're going to rebel against that. And it's like, I don't want to be one of these guys that's just a WWE machine star. Him losing that way in the ring, and then him having to diversify what he does in the ring and tell a different story each time he's in the match, to me, gives him way more credibility. I'm a way bigger Randy Orton fan now than I was
a month ago,
2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. You know,
now you were coming around like 2 weeks ago. A month ago, you were still down. But I think the other thing, and you kind of briefly mentioned this, not specifically, but about like his power slam, he's not just doing. It's not the same five moves in a row. Now, like this match with Punk, so he tried that power slam and he missed it, but he came with that power slam later, and it wasn't in that same sequence. So it's showing again. I mean, I knew the guy could wrestle, but it's showing that he can wrestle on the fly now instead of just being 100% scripted. Right? And I think that's the thing that wrestling like Daniel Bryan, wrestling CM Punk, some guys that are really great technicians, has brought out the fact that he can be a little more creative in the ring than when he's always going against Big Show, you know, or Sheamus or Wade Barrett or some of these guys.
So you mean to tell me that a match is more interesting if it's not the same match over and over again, and it's not the same setup, it's not the same comeback? You mean to tell me that you're going to watch that match and get more invested in the character? What a concept there.
Tell Vince.
Well, I think the guy that's kind of bringing that around and kind of looking back at his past matches, I think Triple H is really starting to show in the ring with the matches that people are having. It's just the storytelling aspect. I'm just wondering if someone came to Randy Orton and said, okay, it's time for you to... We've done the easy route with you. You're not an easy route guy. John Cena is an easy route guy. He's going to have the same... You know he's going to pull off a big move and blah, blah, blah and everything. And it's kind of the same thing over and over again. But at the same time, I'm just wondering how much is it the people in the back or how much is it of the people that they're wrestling? Because Cena versus CM Punk is still probably the match of the year to me. When it was for whatever the rematch or whatever it was, yeah. And just like kind of
Raw.
Yeah, kind of the back and forth like that, and it kind of had the whole kind of stable of I'm going to kick out of all your finishers, and I'm going to kick out of all your finishers, but the storytelling aspect of it worked really well. I'm just wondering, what is it? Is it backroom, or is it just because he's starting to work with good guys now?
I think it's probably because he's starting to work with different guys now. I mean, I think there was a definite commonality between most of the opponents that Randy Orton had fought for the last couple of years, and it was just, you know, they're putting him up against brawlers, and he was just out brawling whoever he went up against with. But this last run, ever since he's gotten involved with Team Hell No and whatnot, all the guys he's been in the ring with are pretty much technicians, right? Whether it's Hell No, even the guys from The Shield, or Daniel Bryan, or now Punk. I mean, I think it forced him to elevate his game, but I think they also made it easier for him too, because I think it's a different thing when Randy Orton is like the monster compared to when he's the small guy. And I think he plays it better when he's the monster going against a smaller guy like Punk than it does when he's the small guy going against the Big Show or...
Yeah.
And they're good matches when he's doing it, but you know, it's the same match over and over for a couple of years.
I wouldn't put Big Show in that category.
Yeah.
Just because that Big Show match was good. I think it's more of a case of, like, say, like a Sheamus match. You have two guys that have... They have stayed wrestling matches. That's their match is going to be this way. Sheamus' match is going to be a certain way. Randy Orton's, and they try to mesh those two together, and they couldn't go off the fly. Yeah.
But like Sheamus, Cesaro, Swagger. I don't think they're necessarily Swagger. Oh, Barrett. Like guys like that was like the same type of guy that Randy Orton kept going against, and that's why he kept getting the same kind of match over and over. So now that I just think you putting him up against some technicians, I think it's bringing out a new level in him, and I think that shows over the last month.
Well,
or so.
You mentioned those three guys, and those three guys are as much success as they've had, and if you can say Wade Barrett has success, but as much success or legitimacy they have in the WWE, they're still pretty green. You know, Sheamus is still pretty green. Wade Barrett is still pretty green in terms of the style of the American style of wrestling of
right.
What we're used to watching. Cesaro is definitely very green. Cesaro is very good, but he hasn't developed what his ring psychology or technique is. He's a bumper for people. Wade Barrett really isn't a bumper. Sheamus isn't a bumper. But then you have these guys in Daniel Bryan and CM Punk that have had to go to ROH. Daniel Bryan was in Japan for a long time, so he picked up different things here and there. So yeah, I'm impressed that he's having these matches with these guys, and at the same time, he's not walking in and saying, "I'm Randy Orton, I can't lose." And I think that just brings a whole other different element to his character. He can't cut promos still, but his ring work is good now. So it's better than having can't cut a promo, can't have ring work. So I don't have another John Cena that I have to watch. When I'm watching this match, I was actually looking forward to this match. I was like, yeah, Randy Orton, CM Punk, I haven't seen that in a long time. I don't know if I've ever saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And it delivered.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that Orton can't cut a promo. They just need to have the right promo for him. Like, when they come in, they talk to him for about 2-3 minutes and get out, and then he's fine.
He can't cut a baby face.
No, no.
And that's the promo they're trying to give him
to
cut.
Yeah. You can't put him out there for five minutes straight and let him just talk. It's going to get redundant really quick. But, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
All right, so...
You think we're up to that time?
I think we're up to that time. About 40 minutes in.
Okay. Did you want to add in the tag team partner of?
No, we gotta let the A's breathe on that.
Gotta let the A's breathe on that. All right. So I'm gonna induct somebody here, who I tried to induct a month or so ago, and you called an audible, rightfully so. Right. I think we got somebody better in at the time. But this guy has been someone that I thought was deserving and kind of guy that I think kind of got forgotten along the way, especially in the States. That's going to be the Ultimo Dragon. So I'm a big fan of the Ultimo Dragon.
You were a big fan of the Ultimo Dragon.
Yeah.
Okay.
As were you?
No, there was never a question about me. I didn't know you were that big of a fan.
Oh, yeah. No, I like the Dragon.
You like him because of that video game, right?
I think I did like him because of the video game, but I liked him because as a cruiserweight, he could do all of those moves that he did in the video game. And I think, and like the running powerbomb, for instance, all these different moves, I think it was like perfect for him to come to WCW at the time that he did, because you had a thriving cruiserweight division with guys like Chris Jericho. Benoit was probably still competing there, Eddie Guerrero, right? You had, and then, you know, whatever luchadors they had. So you had, like, a really good cruiserweight division at the time with good wrestlers from different parts of the world. And you could have these guys, since they were all in that 200 to 220 pound weight category, they could pull power moves off on each other. And I think Ultimo Dragon, he had this great combination of flash, athleticism, high flying, and power moves. And that was one thing that really drew me to him. And then on top of it, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's still the record, but at one time he had 10 belts worldwide at the same time. And there's, if you ever like Google image Ultimo Dragon, there's like a picture of him with his arms extended out. He's got like belts around his waist, around his chest, draped over his arms, around his neck. I mean, this is incredible. I just thought really skilled guy. If he had gotten a chance to really get a good run in the WWE, I think he could have been a much bigger star than he was, because, you know, WWE really haven't done anything with any of the Japanese wrestlers. And WCW delved in a little bit when they did.
Now, Ultimo Dragon was a Japanese wrestler, but he didn't train in Japan. He trained in Mexico. He trained in Mexico, and that's what I found really great about him, or what I really like about him, was that he came across as a Japanese wrestler, but I really think it speaks to some of the talent that they do have in Mexico. I think when you're inundated with Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara, you think that all Mexican wrestlers suck. But this guy trained over there. Jericho earned his chops in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I just think, he did, I think after the acquisition, I think he had a brief stint in WWE, but it didn't last very long. But I think, you know, if he had gotten a chance to really show what he could do, and if they had any kind of focus on cruiserweights and let him go against some other guys, the guy was way, you can't even put Rey Mysterio in the same conversation as Ultimo Dragon if you have ever actually watched both of these guys perform. I mean, Rey Mysterio doesn't hold a candle to Ultimo Dragon. For all the flack that WCW gets, and they made a lot of really bad decisions, there's no doubt about that. But one thing I thought they really did well was bring in guys from Japan. They brought the right guys in. Masahiro Chono, Great Muda, Ultimo Dragon, Jushin Thunder Liger. And they all gave these guys at least respectable runs. There's one thing you never really see. I think Hakushi's probably the last guy in WWE that got a decent run from Japan. Unless I'm wrong, you can tell me. I know you're the expert.
His run with Barry Horowitz? And the
has there been a Japanese import since then?
No,
Yokozuna aside, of course.
Yeah, because he was Japanese. Yeah. No, I mean, Hakushi was probably in the biggest, probably the biggest match in WWE was him losing to Bret Hart.
Right.
And that's one thing that people always bring up, such great storytelling with that. And I kind of guffaw at that because I think Bret Hart could have had a much better match with Hakushi. But that goes against what we're trying to do right here with Ultimo Dragon. I liked Ultimo Dragon just because he's a Japanese guy. I like Japanese wrestlers. The Dragon Sleeper was a great move. He had the Dragon. What's the Hurricane? The
Dragon Rana.
Yeah, the Dragon Rana.
Top rope
off the top rope. Yeah, and then
did he invent the Shiranui?
Is that the one where?
It's like a. It looks like he's going to do a cutter
off the top rope, or it's the standing one.
There's a standing one, and there's the one where he runs into the corner.
Yeah,
slice spread they call it now.
Yeah, no, he didn't invent that one, but he did invent the dragon cutter, and that's where he's in front of the guy, his back is up against the chest, he holds him by the neck, and then he does a flip, and then cuts him. Yeah,
that's the Shiranui.
Yeah, no, he invented that.
Yep.
So, people talk about, like, kicks right now are all the rage in WWE. Del Rio does a monster kick. Daniel Bryan does a monster kick. Sin Cara tried to do a monster kick yesterday on Raw, but it was like...
getting good leg slap in when he kicked.
He botched that one, too.
He botched the leg slap.
But this guy was doing that.
Yep.
This guy was doing that, 15 years before. The one thing I didn't like about him was that he was on the WWE PlayStation game or whatever like that, and you could never play him because his Titantron would always freeze up the processor of the PlayStation, so you'd never be able to play that guy. The only way you could play him is you'd have to turn off the entrances, which sucked. But if you ever noticed that, you could never play that guy in the game because of his entrance.
He had too much stuff going on.
It was I don't know what it was. It was like an FLV fire or FMV. I don't know what it was, but you could never play it. It would freeze up the whole game, and you'd have to reset it, and you're just like, well, what the hell? You talk about WCW making mistakes here and there. I thought they made a really big mistake with that guy because it's very hard for U.S. companies to market a Japanese guy. Mm-hmm. And the guy, I mean, he followed the typical pattern of Jericho, of Saturn, of Benoit, of Eddie Guerrero. Like, these guys were just monster workers in the ring, but they didn't know what to do with them. They could never see them going up to the next level. And I think at the time, we always bag on Rey Mysterio Jr., but he did what he had to do to become a world champion. Now, he had to roid himself up, but that's what he had. That was his choice. I mean, these guys, they're like a head shorter than Shawn Michaels or whatever, like it was. You could say the same thing about Benoit. You can say the same thing about Guerrero. So you have these guys that you can't think they can go to the next level. And part of the reason why we have the Hall of Kayfabe is because we're saying, like, these guys could have been the next level. They could have done a lot of business.
Well, the thing is, they all jumped ship to WWE and they all won the world title.
Yeah.
They all went to a bigger promotion
and got bigger. I mean, but the whole thing was that there's a couple things that held this guy back. One was that he was small. He wasn't muscular.
He was Japanese.
He was Japanese. And his uniform or his outfit had much to be desired. I think if it had been more hardcore, maybe throw some jeans in there or something like that.
You don't like the bib?
I didn't like the bib. I didn't like the shit on the side and stuff, anything like that.
Yeah, I like the mask. The mask was
tight. Oh, yeah, no, the mask was tight. But, yeah, just make it a hard mask.
Well, it would have been cool if that was his entrance attire and maybe he took the little shoulder pads off or whatever. Yeah. But because it looked fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe too much in the ring.
Well, the other problem, too, is that he got hurt. I mean, his arm... They thought like his arm was going to atrophy and he would never be able to use it. Mm-hmm. And he came back. I think he had like an infection there or something like that.
Oh, really?
And he came back and then he did WWE for a little bit. And then, I think he got hurt again. But yeah, no, I mean, he's definitely a guy. We always kind of talk about Masahiro Chono. You always talk about the Great Muta. You talk, those are the first two Japanese kind of wrestlers that come to mind. Ultimo Dragon is at least probably top five Japanese wrestlers that come to my mind. He's probably top three. He's one of those guys. Then of course you have Akushi, and then you have your boy,
Hayabusa. Not even mentioning Misawa.
Yeah, and then you start delving into the matter, and you realize that there's a lot more. But I just lost my train of thought. But he's definitely a guy that you can go on YouTube and kind of see his spots. And it's just sad that he only lives on YouTube now, and there's no like full match of this guy or matches that you could see because, I mean, he'd throw that dragon cutter out of anywhere. Just the storytelling that he did was just great. And then he would lock those fools down. It wasn't like they start walking to the ring. It's like he clamps that thing in, mm-hmm. and it's over. And that's what I liked about those type of submissions. I don't like submissions where they eagle over or inch over to the ring. I like submissions that stop you cold, and that was definitely one of them. And I thought it was really effective.
Yeah, good. So we're in agreement then. Ultimo Dragon.
Ultimo Dragon. Yeah, I didn't want to do it at the time, but when you brought up, because I thought I'd have to carry the show. I don't want to carry the show when it comes to Hall of Kayfabe. I like to hear kind of your background, what you like. I never really knew you liked that guy that much.
Oh really? No, I have.
I like him. Yeah. He's good.
And then now that I got to thinking, I was thinking that there was no Japanese guy in WWE since Hakushi. I was wrong. There was
there was
Taka Michinoku.
And there was Kayantai, dude.
Kayantai
and the other dude, Sho Funaki.
Yeah, well, he was part of it.
Yeah,
because it was Taka Michinoku and then Kung Funaki.
Yeah, and Mr. Pogo.
Yeah. But now that I remember those guys. If you watched like WWE and you didn't watch WCW and you were a fan of those guys at all,
Kayantai.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, Ultimo Dragon is like so far ahead superior to anything that Kayantai was doing. So if you were entertained like by Michinoku, which Michinoku's fine, but he's nowhere in the class of
Michinoku. They didn't know how to use him. They had him when he first came up into WWE. They had him kind of be the cruiserweight.
Yeah.
Baby face, and it was fine, but once that ended, they didn't know how to use them. They tried to build stories around them. The famous I don't want to bring that up, but yeah, you know, bringing Kai and Tai in and yeah, with the sword,
Malvinus situation.
I live by the sword.
Indeed.
That was good. I like the indeed.
Indeed was good.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, when you have like talent like that, you don't know how to use them. It's kind of, you know, you always bring up kind of the Samoan wrestlers and the island wrestlers about how they've never been used, and the Usos are being used now, and they're being used in the right way. But the whole thing is that they still have the face paint. You know, they get a push with the big kind of Samoan face paint, and Cole has to botch what it means every single week in and week out. But the Japanese wrestlers are kind of the same way. It's like they never get their due. They, you know, it's kind of funny, like Ric Flair's, you know, saying like they did a pay-per-view against the New Japan stars, and then they had them come to the U.S. and it's like, well, nobody in the U.S. wants to watch Japanese stars, because to them they're just a Japanese wrestler. They don't have all the kind of steep storylines that they have in Japan. And that's kind of, it's always shown, like Hakushi, I mean, that guy was the man, and they didn't know how to use the guy, and then he left. They could have done some really good stuff with him. And it just kind of shows, you know, the reason why we had this segment is to kind of recognize that. And it's just not across racial lines, too. It's like there's a lot of guys here who kind of bring up the Wyatt family and stuff and everything. They have a lot of good characters. Sandow, Cody Rhodes, they have all these good characters that we think can go to the next level. And I just don't want to have the last two guys I just mentioned. I don't want to have them as a Hall of Kayfabe 20 years from now, or whatever it is.
Yeah. All right. So let's do this then. So we kind of talked about it last week. This is going to be our last show before the pay-per-view. So do you have any like, have you changed your mind on, you know, since we had the go-home episode of Raw, you changed your mind on what's going to happen, anything like that going into...
Well, are you going to buy the pay-per-view?
Dude, I got no money.
I got no money, man.
If you buy it, I'll come over.
It's on my flipping birthday. Why am I buying it for?
maybe someone will give you money on your birthday.
Yay! Has my opinion changed? If you follow Wrestling 101 and Daniel Bryan kind of gained the upper hand on this show and everything, we would really point to that he's not going to win it.
I was the one that said Bryant was going to win.
Yeah.
You said Punk was going to win.
I don't think Punk's going to win because you kind of changed my mind. I think you laugh, but hey, you got the problems. Yeah, hey. I think Brock Lesnar is going to come in. I think there's too much storyline with CM Punk for him to win it. I probably think that Daniel Bryan's going to win. It doesn't interest me as much. I think I'm having a Bray Wyatt hangover because all I care about is that. That's all I want to watch now. I'm more interested in the Shield. You know, I want to make sure that the Usos don't beat the Shield for the titles and stuff.
That's not bad.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, though. When you like a certain group of wrestlers, you get worried, you know? Like, you're kind of sitting there, you know.
I'm not in the least... I like the Usos, too. I'm not in the least bit concerned they're going to walk away with those tag belts.
I think SmackDown, I don't know who's going to win. I really don't.
Well, before we go on a SmackDown, let's finish on the other one.
Well,
so,
look at you cutting me off, man. Yeah, very good. Yeah. All right.
Well, I know you can get back to that one. No, there's something I wanted to say about the SmackDown one, too. So you're thinking Daniel Bryan. So what about, what would you say, you think Kane's going to perform, or you think Bray Wyatt's going to take that spot?
I'm hoping Bray Wyatt takes the spot. Yeah, that's my dream, for him to take the spot. I don't think... if Bray Wyatt takes a spot, it'd be very intriguing to see him win Money in the Bank, because I think his gimmick is really tailored to that. Him walking out with the three guys, with the goat guy, or the sheep guy, sorry. The sheep guy in the back. And
do you like the rocking chair in the aisle?
It still scares me. Mork and Mindy, you know, that grandmother, dude. Nah, yeah. No, everything this guy is doing right now, it's good. I like it all. But it'd be very, very intriguing for me to see him win the Money in the Bank. That's what I'd really want to see. With all the RVD promos, they can go the easy route and have RVD win Money in the Bank. I just don't, you know, RVD versus John Cena at a pay-per-view, maybe that's the way they want to go. That's two big names that people know. Cena needs to dust someone else off, and maybe that's the way they go with that. I think Daniel will win. I just don't see any storyline going with Daniel versus Cena. I just don't see it. In terms of marketability for a pay-per-view, is that something that I do want to see? Yeah. But in terms of WWE corporate, the way they see it, and not being a mark and going all crazy, but kind of looking at the business aspect of it. I think RVD versus John Cena is way more profitable than anything else. There's also kind of a slip too. I think when they interviewed Randy Orton, and he's like, "Yeah, I can't wait to face John Cena for the title or whatever it is with Money in the Bank." So it kind of you're kind of going like, "Well, dude, what the fuck's going on?" It's like, story, you know, let Mark Henry win, then Cena can win SummerSlam, and then you know RVD, you know, then you can have programs with RVD and John Cena. Because I don't care about either one of those guys. And
are you referring, sorry, on the Randy Orton part to where he said that if he wins it, he's going to cash it in that night? Is that what you're referring to? I wouldn't be surprised if Cena gets cashed in on it if he wins that match and then someone cashes in on him, I could definitely see that happening because they'll do something where it still makes Mark Henry look good and that he beat John Cena so bad that someone was able to just come down and cash in. I could definitely see that. I would say better than 50-50. I think whoever wins is cashing in on John Cena that night after the Mark Henry match. So that would be my...
That'd be a great pay-per-view because nobody cares about the main event. Nobody's going to care about John Cena versus Mark Henry, so maybe that's what makes people stick around to watch the actual last match.
Yeah. Now, I'll ask you this. I'll ask you what you think now about the SmackDown one, but I just wanted to say, like, I liked that little segment yesterday where everyone was telling Fandango to shut up and then Wade Barrett just knocked his ass out. Like, that was the best thing Wade Barrett's done in about 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that means face turn or anything like that, but I thought that was awesome.
Is Wade Barrett turning face now? I put that on Twitter. Is he turning face? Is this a double turn?
Is this him and Cody Rhodes going to be a new tag team? So you do think Cody's coming out as a baby face?
I think, yeah, that all the storytelling aspects are there. Sandow's being more of a prick to Cody Rhodes and starting to speak for him and stuff. And I think something's going to come to a head there. I don't think it is. I know it will. Because the past 4 weeks, they've been butting heads and this, that, and this. It's been subtle, but I think it's really going to come to a head during that match. So that takes out Damian Sandow. And
from winning?
Yeah, yeah.
And Cody from winning?
I think so. Okay. I don't... Does Cody deserve it? Hell yeah, but it's the same thing with Daniel Bryan. I don't see a storyline within that. Because you're going to have him go against Del Rio, or Ziggler. I just don't see it. Right now, I don't see it.
Sure.
There's no momentum for the guy. Do I want to see it? Yeah. Do I think Cody Rhodes can be a really good small, like a typical quote-unquote Shawn Michaels type cast champion? Hell yeah. I think he has all the chops to do it. I just don't see it happening right now.
All
right,
so we say...
You still have the Damian Sandow storyline you got to fix, too.
Sure. Yeah, unless one of them wins the briefcase and they're fighting over it.
Yeah.
Which I think would be interesting, too.
Well, that'd be like a wet dream, then, because that's never going to happen, right? Okay. You know? I mean, that's not going to happen. They're not going to base a storyline around Sandow and Rhodes. That's not going to happen.
All right.
Both of them are too good to have a storyline like that.
All right, so let's put them off the side.
I'm not going to know. Okay, go ahead.
I'm trying to agree with you. Okay, so they're not going to win. I think we can agree Swagger's not going to win.
Swagger will not win.
Okay, no. So then that comes down. Fandango not going to win. Can we agree on that? Or
I sure hope so. I sure hope we can.
So you would hold out a slight...
You would think
Fandango has a better chance to win than either of the Rose Scholars. Is that what you're telling me right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rose Scholars are on the bottom. Then you have Fandango.
Okay, so you got Fandango, Barrett.
Barrett, I don't think is going to win.
At all? No chance?
I don't. He definitely has a chance.
Yeah, I think he might.
But why? At the same time, why would you do that? I mean, why would you do that?
I mean, I would build and then have him win. I wouldn't have done what I've done to that guy for the past 6 months.
Yeah.
And then have him win all of a sudden, unless I was turning him face, which I'm not advocating. But, like, that would be the only way I would say.
The only thing that can save Wade Barrett right now is turning face. That's the only thing that's going to help this guy right now. And I know we always harp, like, you can't turn a guy heel and it's going to fix it. People want to cheer Wade Barrett. They don't know how to because they're told not to do it. But the guy is very stale. Something needs to change with this guy. I think if they build him the right way and make him a face over time or whatever, then I think he's going to take off. But the whole problem that you're going to have is you still have Del Rio and Ziggler, and they're really trying to push Ziggler as a face. So I think that cancels out Wade Barrett.
I have an idea, but let me finish this. So Cesaro, no chance?
I don't think Cesaro doesn't have a chance because I don't think Swagger has a chance. Because then what do? You have Cesaro. If Cesaro has a chance and he can turn face because Zeb wants it to be on Jack Swagger or whatever like that, and you can have a storyline like that, that storyline is getting pretty old too. Zeb Coulter is getting pretty stale. Swagger's getting pretty stale. I thought they did a decent promo on SmackDown. I had no problem with that. Mm-hmm. I still don't get why Cesaro's in there because he's not American. So I don't get the whole thing about that. If they have, I can see a storyline of them of Cesaro versus Swagger and Coulter. I think that'd be very good. Swagger didn't get that push. They wanted to give Swagger that push. He didn't capitalize on it, and it's not working anymore. So now Swagger, I was a lot more interested in Swagger when he came back because I knew the guy had the goods. Right now I'm saying he doesn't have the goods. Just anything that he's doing, he doesn't have it.
All right, so process of elimination, I'd say you're probably about 75% saying Dean Ambrose is going to take it.
I think
it's almost as close to a mortal lock as you can get that Dean Ambrose wins that match.
As close as a lock I can get without having personal feelings in it, you know. Because if I'm looking at it objectively, like we just did, he has the best run. He has the biggest push. Him as a U.S. champion, Money in the Bank, it's just going to speak a ton of volumes for the Shield. It can also bring in an aspect of maybe the Shield breaks up. I don't know what it is, but there's a ton of storylines there. And the whole thing that he deserves it the most. You, out of all the guys that gets Money in the Bank, no, I mean, okay, listen. Out of all the guys that are getting that will get Money in the Bank, who would take off with it the best? Who has the mic skill? Who has the in-ring work to take off with it the best?
Either be him or one of the Rose Scholars.
Yeah, but the Rose Scholars aren't going to do it. We've already decided that the Rose Scholars aren't going to get it. Of course,
you decided.
Well, I don't think they will. Do I want Damian Sandow to have Money in the Bank? Fuck yes, dude. You know, but I know it's not going to happen. The guy that's primed for it the most, he's putting the dudes the most in, and he performs every fucking week when he wrestles, is Dean Ambrose. He's the logical choice to put on it, and I think he's going to take off either as a super monster heel or as a super face. He can go either way. Just like we talk about CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Ambrose to me is the same type of wrestler. I think Seth Rollins is the same type of wrestler too, you know. Yeah. And whatever residuals that they give to Roman Reigns, it works even better. So what was your thought? That what was your idea?
So
John Morrison's going to come back?
No.
Okay.
Shit. Okay. So this would be what I would do, and I think you could revive two floundering wrestlers and make a legitimate opposition for the Shield in the tag team division. I would take Wade Barrett, turn him face, tag him with Sheamus, and William Regal as the manager, and then. That could be your babyface tag team that goes after the Shield.
So Wade Barrett's gonna come out after Sheamus gets his ass kicked and help him up and dust him off and stuff, and then Sheamus will do the same thing for.
I'm just telling you. I'm not saying that. I don't think it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you that.
If Bet at My Donuts could have one wish, that's what it would be. I'd even compound on that and say that, you know,
bring Drew McIntyre in.
I like the theme song, dude. But anyways, so you have Regal interfere in both, and then they create this heel team of Sheamus and Wade Barrett, right? And then during that process, that's how you make the Shield baby faces. So now you don't have all these like mega, you know, all these heel fashions and stuff. So that's one way you can do it. So if everything worked perfect in our world, if we're playing with our G.I. Joes, that's what would happen.
All
right. And while we're doing it, while we're doing the turn and you know, we're putting suplexes on and stuff, like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, and then we're like, yeah, yeah. And then the next day we, like, expand on it and stuff. It's not that hard to do. So go ahead. So what's your other?
No, I didn't have another.
Oh, okay. It was the two forces,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, but you just said that if I had one wish, I would have other wishes higher than that. Yeah. But if you're telling me how.
Does it involve wrestling?
Oh, I got wishes higher. I got other wishes too.
Okay,
it's not my highest wrestling wish or life wish at this point. No, but yeah, I think Wade Barrett's going nowhere. I think Sheamus is going nowhere. I think William Regal is underutilized, and I think he does. I know he's involved in NXT, so I'm sure he's doing a great job because all these NXT guys come through good.
Did you hear about the next NXT? The guy that's coming out. Because they were kind of saying that there's another NXT that guy that's coming up.
I saw that there was a photo, and he was in the background at Raw yesterday.
Okay.
But they didn't necessarily say he was coming up.
Was it Cassius on?
Nah, it was Rhett Titus.
Oh, okay. All right.
Who's? Yeah, I've seen him wrestle. He's all right. He's Did you watch TNA last week?
No.
Okay, so do you know who Kenny King is?
No.
Okay, so in ROH. Okay, so here. In ROH, he was Kenny King's partner. But Actually, I'll say there is a lot of discussion that this other former tag team, the Briscoe Brothers, might be coming to WWE.
Oh, that'd be great.
Those guys are good.
Yeah.
Those guys are real good.
All you got to say is Briscoe Brothers. I already know they're good.
They're not.
I know they're not, but still, but they still have to live up to the name.
They're good.
Just like Arn Anderson wasn't a real Anderson, you know, he still had to live up to the name. So we're getting close to that part.
What about Ken Anderson?
Ken Anderson, Mr. N? Yeah, come on. Guy's terrible. Like Lars and Gina
Anderson.
they're rolling over in their graves right now. So we're coming up on that time. I don't know if I'm going to cut you off, but we could go out for another hour, you know, and we don't have to do that. So I'm going to check to see if it's Media Scale 33 or Media Scale 34, but as we always do, I'll let you roll out with it.
All right. So, I think that the build for Money in the Bank has been really good. So, I mean, I agree with Bad News Ramen over here. I think I'm heavily anticipating this pay-per-view much more than the last pay-per-view.
And that pay-per-view was good, too.
Everything but the main event.
Everything but the main event, yeah.
But I think this, they've had a great build. And I think all these last four or five, maybe even six Raws have been really good. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of Money in the Bank. So, you know, hopefully you get to watch it, and hopefully it's worth your money.
And as a special bonus, as we do our outro song, I'm just going to play that. I'm going to play the Bray Wyatt song the whole time and just let it cue out and do all that stuff. One of the better entrance musics. I was trying to think of the entrance. You like that entrance music? I feel like I'm Manny Pacquiao over here or something.
I thought you were being dusty over there.
With the entrance musics. But one of the better ones for a long time. I'm trying to think of a top five of kind of entrances and stuff. I think CM Punk is up there. I think...
well, that's cheating, man.
Hollywood Hogan is up there. Yeah, because of Jimi Hendrix. Yeah, but, you know.
No, I was talking about Punk. But
yeah, I don't care. It's still a great entrance, so.
Yeah.
It's
kind of stale now, but when Jericho first came through...
I still like Jericho's music.
I still like it.
I don't like his entrance. I like his old pyrotechnics. That was good.
The technics.
The pyrotechnics. one shot. So, Media Scale number 33 or 34. I'm not sure which one it is. I'm your man over here, Bad News Rollin. This is my boy over here, Better Have My Donuts. And we are now good to go. Radio.